JTech Studios in Atlanta, Georgia. It's America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won. And now, here are your hosts, Tom Bastek and Mike Jacobs.
And welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. It's America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won. I am Tom Bastek, and alongside of me, as always...
Hello, I am Mike Jacobs. It is so good to be back, Tom. I tell you, sitting down to record this, it's like stepping back into a comfy pair of shoes.
Oh, yeah, man. And it's one of those comfy pair of shoes that aren't worn out yet. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, it's still going strong.
I was very much having a hard time going to bed last night. It was like almost Christmas Eve to me, where I wake up and it's Christmas the next day and I get to open my presents. That's how I feel about doing this podcast with you.
I know exactly what you mean. I was totally expecting to be like, finally, I get a break and take some time off. But it's just like immediately I missed it and was ready to get back to doing it.
Yeah. And we've both been busy. And thanks to everybody for being patient for us to get back to what we're doing. I don't know if we planned quite as long a break as we took, but we're back.
Well, life gets in the way, but that's okay. We are indeed back and we are going to keep going strong.
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody, for listening in to last season, especially the great feedback that we've got on the really big show that we closed out season one with.
Yeah, and also the Behind the Cough episode that we released, a week ago now.
Yeah.
The numbers on that have been through the roof, but people aren't telling us what they think, so I don't know what that means.
Hey, I'm not worried about it. If you liked it or disliked it, if you want to tell us, great. If you don't want to, that's fine, too.
Yeah, no news is good news as far as I'm concerned. So anyways, if you haven't checked that out yet, please do.
Yeah, please. It's a behind the show. It's about the Million Dollar Cough, which is about the Charles Ingram scandal with Who Wants to Be a Millionaire in the UK. And it's different. It's a totally different format than what we normally do.
Indeed.
Speaking of which, we definitely want to say thanks to everybody who helped contribute on that. Brian Henniger was one of our researchers who did a absolute bang-up job, and you'll hear him continually throughout that podcast as well. And while we're talking about Brian, we should definitely push out all his information. He actually hosts, believe it or not, his own version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
And we'll have all the information on the website as well. But he's got a Twitch stream that's out there, which is twitch.tv/BZNTV. And they've got a buzzin.tv, and that's buzzin.tv/Discord, Discord server as well. So check it out. They do the show every week, every other week, something like that. But all the details are there. Brian's a great guy. He's been on Millionaire. He knows what he's doing. And they're having fun with it. So check it out, please. It's the least that we could do for him helping us out to have such a great episode with the Million Dollar Cough.
Yeah. And I mean, when you hear him in that episode, you can clearly hear that he is he's a very well-spoken man, knows what he's talking about, and his show is a lot of fun. Highly recommend it.
And I think he made it further on Millionaire than Christian did, too.
Did he?
Yeah, I think so. I'll have to go back and listen to the interview again, but I know what he said, because Christian only made it to 32,000, I think.
I believe that is correct. He bowed out at 64.
Yeah, something like that. So... anyway, want to say special thanks to Chris and Tommy and everybody over at Quarantine the Game Show. We got to do that. I guess, gosh, it was right at the end of season one.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Oh, God. And the good news is we won. We beat a fellow podcast called the Half Hour Radio Hour. And I have to say, you and Christian really came through on that.
Well, it was kind of amazing that we lucked out with a lot of the categories, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I think I contributed at least one answer, which I felt good about, but you guys definitely took the lead. And there was one, I forget which one it was that Christian got, that you and I both like looked at each other like, I don't even know, and he was just
immediately like, oh guys, I know this one. What was that one?
I forget. But anyway, the nice thing is it's still up on their Facebook page. It's had over 1,000 views, by the way.
Wow.
So check it out if you get a chance. It's Quarantine the Game Show. If you go to Facebook and just look for Quarantine the Game Show, or we'll also put it on our website and have the links to that as well. It is there in perpetuity. They run a new show almost every week. A lot of great teams coming together. And apparently, we may even get invited back for like a tournament of champions to compete again.
Yeah. And it also just now occurs to me that I believe this is everybody's first chance to actually see us as opposed to just hear us.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because we're actually video on there. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. So if you want to know what we look like, I'm very hot.
my Brillo pad beard is it's doing its work these days. I'll say that.
I think I should probably qualify that, though. I'm very hot as in hot and sweaty, like not.
Oh,
hot.
I thought you meant like attractive, because I mean, that's true, too.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it. Okay. Without any further ado, a man who also has a good looking beard right now.
Oh, his is way better than mine. That is for sure.
It is thick, man. He I'll tell you, when that goes gray and white, he will be an incredible Santa Claus.
Yeah, it's that like tight, almost afro kind of hair.
Yeah.
Like it's mine's getting long, but it's kind of sparse and wiry. His is nice and full and tightly packed.
You guys can at least grow them. I still have this baby face that does just come in so patchy. It's ridiculous. Anyway, we're talking about Christian Kerrion with the news. Are you ready, Michael?
Let's do it.
Light up your cigarette, crack open a beer, put the kiddos to bed. From chaos around the world to carnage in your very old front yard, it's time for the news.
Thank you very much. This is the news brought to you by BuzzerBlog.com. The world of game shows is mourning the death of legendary MC Tom Kennedy, who passed away 2 weeks ago at the age of 93. A lot of people don't realize how many shows Tom Kennedy hosted. I'm pretty sure he is in the top three, right below Bill Cullen, of just the number of game shows he hosted. I mean, you have Password Plus, You Don't Say, Name That Tune, Split Second, Body Language, Dr. IQ, all kinds of shows in a career spanning well over three decades. He is one of my favorite hosts, one of the people that I had no knowledge of when I was younger, but when Game Show Network became a thing, I was all of a sudden familiar with a lot of his work, especially on The Price is Right. He was one of the first hosts to take over for the nighttime version because Bob Barker was doing it during the day. So, again, one of the hardest hosting jobs in television to learn all those games at the same time and be able to host it in your own way. Just totally underrated gig and just one of the best hosts ever. And we're going to miss him.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely remember him. And when he went, I was like, I guess it was more of like a name and a face kind of thing. Like, Tom Kennedy, I know the name. And then I saw the face and I was like, oh, of course. Absolutely. You know, I mean, it just classic.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he was one of those people where you don't realize who he is until you see him. And then you realize that he has lent a lot of the stereotypical, you know, what you consider a stereotypical game show host, that sort of slick hair and the smile and the whole attitude. A lot of that comes from him. So, yeah, huge loss.
What else you got for us, Christian?
Well, two top-rated daytime game shows are headed into prime time. The Price is Right, hosted by Drew Carey, and Let's Make a Deal, hosted by Wayne Brady, each announced three new themed specials to be broadcast in October, November, and December. In addition to both shows revealing newly redesigned, socially distant sets, Let's Make a Deal, in its primetime debut, will feature a virtual wall with contestants from across the country and prizing bigger than anything the show has seen in its 57 years on the air. And traders will have a shot at winning $100,000 hidden in golden envelopes throughout each special. In the meantime, The Price is Right will be featuring frontline workers from the various communities affected by the coronavirus. Host Drew Carey will be paying thanks to those people that we're also thankful for by giving them the opportunity to be contestants on the show. Other planned specials include the cast of the CBS sitcom The Neighborhood, as well as brand new Christmas specials for both series. So I'm always excited to see, especially The Price is Right at night, is just a really fun vibe, and they have a history of doing those shows bigger than they do any other daytime show. So I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
And I love the concept of both of those. You know, so to be clear on Let's Make a Deal, It's just they're doing it virtually with people at home, right? Like over a web call or something, right?
That's exactly it. And I have a picture of the set, and I'll send it to you guys. But they completely redesigned the set, and it's really unbelievable. Super interactive. They did a beautiful job. All the shows, I feel like. Yeah, you know, all the shows this season that had to adapt to COVID, I think just did a phenomenal job, you know, changing to this new reality. And I think it's going to be really fun watching all these different game shows this season.
I think the Price is Right doing it with the frontline workers is a good call, too, because it sort of harkens back to the days when they would do, you know, salute to the military or things like that. So it feels very like on brand and normal in this very unnormal time. It's a sort of breath of fresh air that way.
Absolutely. Big dose of happiness, I think, is going to be coming our way.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. The only thing I don't understand is I've never seen the show The Neighborhood, so that's going to be totally lost on me.
Well, that's fair. I've never even heard of it until just now. So
there we go. Great. Speaking of new shows, there's a lot of brand new shows out there. I haven't gotten a chance to see them all. For those who don't know, I'm buying a new house, so it's been taking up a lot of my television time. But, you know, Weakest Link's new out there. Supermarket Sweep's out there. Christian, you got any opinion on any of these new ones that you've seen?
All right. So here's the thing about Supermarket Sweep, right? I had a chance to watch the first episode beginning to end.
Cool.
Congratulations to everybody involved. I have a few personal friends who are working on the show who wrote a lot of the games and things, and I'm really proud of them. But my nitpicks with the show have nothing to do with their work. I think, first of all, Supermarket Sweep is a show that's very near and dear to my heart in a way that a lot of other shows aren't as important. It's just, it's a total vibe. It's just, you know, Supermarket Sweep is one of those shows that I quite literally grew up with. So to see them reboot the show, I was cautiously optimistic. I was pleased that the show did a good job of updating itself. I think that Leslie Jones does a really good job, even if she has a tendency to... She has a tendency to scream. And a lot of people on Twitter were kind of taking her to task for that in a way that made me borderline uncomfortable. Because I think that it's not the worst thing in the world to be loud and boisterous, you know what I mean? And she does it, I think, in a way that conveys genuine excitement for the people participating in the show. And a lot of people forget that the original host of the show, David Rubrick, he used to scream all the time.
Sure.
And no one's ever commented on that, let alone how loud his damn sweaters were. So I feel like the volume of the show is the least of the problem. I think that the show is edited in a really... confusing sort of way. When you used to watch the big sweep on the original Supermarket Sweep, there was a way that you can follow the contestants. They sort of said, you know, let's go back to team one. They're picking up hams, and team two is... There's none of that. There's a sort of running commentary, but it's really hard to follow the action, and as a result, it loses a lot of the energy that the original show had. As far as the material and the games themselves, you know, the games that the contestants play to earn time in the sweep, those are really well written and really well done, and I'm really excited to see more of those. I just think the show needs to find its voice. It needs to be more cohesive because I think there are a lot of great ideas, including the bonus round, which I think they do a really good job of. And I give, if I was reviewing it unofficially, I give it a solid 7 out of 10, but I see a lot of room for improvement. And I'm really happy that we have a new version of Supermarket Sweep. I just think there's still work to be done, but I'm excited to see it.
I'm willing to give it the benefit of the doubt because as we saw when we did our Joker's Wild episode, that the version with Snoop Dogg, first season took a minute, stumbled a little bit.
It did.
And it really came back in the second season. So hopefully this will be a faster recovery than that. But I'm also glad to hear that Leslie Jones is doing well as the host. I don't get on Twitter much, but I read Facebook comments, which is probably the worst source of information in the world. But I don't know if the gripes there are legitimate or are, you know, the edgelords trying to just be mad that, you know, a woman is hosting their show or something like that. So I trust your opinion, Christian, and I'm glad to hear that. I am fine with screaming and energetic and whatnot. So if she's doing well overall, obviously I need to watch it and make my own opinion, but I'm glad to hear that it's not just a dumpster fire like the people on Facebook are making it out to be.
Right, and it's totally not a dumpster fire. It is watchable, and I will be watching next week, and I'll be watching as long as there are new episodes. One of the things that is very different from the original original series, is that there's a sort of cast of characters now. So the supermarket has a coffee station, and there's a barista that has, like, a speaking role.
Nice.
And there's, like, a flower shop. Yeah, there's, like, a little florist booth where the, you know, the guy hands out flowers. And there's a cashier who kind of flirts with the whole... I don't know.
It reminds me of the characters in Carmen Sandiego.
It reminds me of the characters in Remote Control. I love it.
There you go.
Yeah, right. And there's, like, a security guard. It's different, but it's interesting. I'm excited to see where it goes.
All right. Well, that's great. Thank you for that. How about this week in game show history?
Well, this week in game show history, October 27th, 1980, the premiere of Blockbusters. Now, Blockbusters is a show where contestants competed to see if two heads were better than one. And it was hosted by Bill Cullen. There was a team of two, usually called a family pair. It was like a mother-daughter or sisters or some relation there, playing against a solo player. And the game was essentially a big board game. So you had 20 hexagons. Each of them had a letter. Every letter represented a one-word answer to a question. You'd buzz in and try to get it right. The family pair would be connecting side to side, connecting the sides of the board, while the solo player was competing to complete top to bottom. And they had a shorter path because there was only one of them. It was a really fascinating show, created by Steve Ryan, who is a puzzle master, eventually went on to draw all the cartoon puzzles for Classic Concentration later in the 80s, and based on a board game called Hex, created by John Nash, the subject of A Beautiful Mind. So there's a connection from Bill Cullen to Russell Crowe, if you think about it.
Ah, boy. Both deans in their own way.
Absolutely. Well,
I was about to say, Christian, I know it's the beginning of the second season. We're all a little rusty, but I am going to have to insist that you refer to him by his full title, the Dean of Game Show Hosts, Bill Cullen.
Oh, my God. Where are my manners? Of course. How can I ever forget?
All right. Well, we'll give you a pass on this one, but going forward, don't expect it so much.
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir.
Well, we want to say a quick thank you for all of the work that you did for us on Behind the Show, The Million Dollar Cough. We had great response from it, and obviously your contributions were a big part of that, so thank you.
My pleasure, as always. I love you guys.
All right, so it's that time. Mike, we are going to, are you ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
Stump the Chump!
All right.
All right, so this week we don't have any questions yet from our audience because we have yet to introduce this, but this is brand new, and what we're going to do is we're going to ask the folks out there in the world to send us via the interwebs their questions, whether it's through Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or through the website, questions for Christian, and we'll see if we can't stump the chump. Now, here's the thing. If you can't stump the chump, then he's not the chump, obviously. You are the chump for asking a question that did not stump the chump.
All this fine print is available on our website.
Did I leave anything out there? Okay.
It's very important to note who is and is not the chump in this situation. It's, you know.
Well, I think it is because I don't typically consider Christian a chump.
Well, I don't consider Christian a chump at all. And the question that I eliminated for this because I thought it was too difficult, he got right away. So that does not bode well for the question I've chosen.
Well, I'm going to throw this out there as well as a little disclaimer. I did not come up with the question this week. I purposely tasked Mike so that if Christian gets it correct, Mike is the chump this week.
All right. Well, I mean, I'm fine with playing all-time chump until we start getting some actual questions from listeners. So
cool. Well, hopefully we won't have to wait long for them. So
all right.
Go ahead.
Here we go. So we're doing wheel this week. So we're gonna talk about some wheel trivia. Pat Sajak, of course, longtime host of the show. In 8 years into the run, he decided to go out and try his luck hosting his own television show. During that time, it was two seasons, apparently, from what I'm reading at the thing in front of me. During that time, who filled in his place?
Well, that is an interesting question. And I wonder if I know the answer to it. Oh my God, of course I do. So this guy was a place kicker for the San Diego Chargers. His name was Rolf Benerschke. This is his only on-camera gig. As a host of a TV show. His name was Rolf Benerschke. I'm telling you, he was a football player. And he was ridiculously bad. He was so nervous, and he was so wooden, and he was so bad at hosting game shows that he never did another one after it. Merv Griffin, the creator of Wheel of Fortune, had this habit of picking hosts completely out of left field, which is why you got a weatherman in the early 80s named Pat Sajak to host Wheel of Fortune, which is why you got just so many examples of shows that he created that he just completely picked a host out of nowhere. Mike Riley, the host of Monopoly, a show that he created in the early 90s, was originally a contestant on the pilot episode hosted by Peter Tamarkin.
That's
right.
And
he was picked. My suspicion is that because he looked like Peter Tamarkin. And that's he could probably get a Tamarkin lookalike for a lot less money. So my answer is Rolf Bernuschka, one of the great unsung heroes in bad game show hosting of the late 80s, replaced Pat Sajak on Wheel of Fortune.
All right, Mike, what does he have it right?
I mean, to the T. I don't know how you knew all that additional information, but yeah, that is absolutely correct. He subbed in for Pat Sajak. I can't pronounce this name. Rolf Bernuschka? You said it a couple times. But anyways, yeah, 1989, he subbed in Wheel of Fortune. Apparently, he didn't last long, because even during that same time that Sajak was away, they had other people, or at least one other guy, Bob Goen, come in. But Rolf Bernuschka was the first, and that is absolutely correct.
Wow. Who would have thought? Who was that guy?
This is going to be a fun segment.
All right. So, next week, if you've got a question for our resident historian and news guy, Mr. Christian Carrion, please submit it to us via the interwebs, and we'll get it on there for Stump the Chump. Christian, we're doing Wheel of Fortune this week. Any great tidbits, anything you want to throw at us, your feelings, tell me about it.
I'll tell you how it came about. Jeopardy was on the air on NBC, and it was starting to look very long in the tooth. It was a very old school looking show. And meanwhile, there was a contract. The show was supposed to be on, you know. And so Lynn Bolin, the head of NBC Daytime at the time, which is about mid-70s, tried to make a deal with Merv Griffin. If you let me cancel Jeopardy, I'll let you put another show on in its place. That show happened to be Wheel of Fortune. Now, the original pilot episode was called Shopper's Bazaar, and it was a much different looking show than what you see on TV today, even what you saw on TV by the time it became Wheel of Fortune. The wheel was upright, like a carnival wheel. It was a very low-tech sort of puzzle board. All the contestants were screaming for some reason. It was just a mess of a show. And a director named Marty Pesetta came along when it came time to make a second pilot. This time it was called Wheel of Fortune. He had this genius idea to turn the wheel on its side and position a camera above the wheel so that you get this beautiful overhead shot. So all of a sudden, the show that looked very tacky and it was very ugly. This very ugly looking show became this sort of microcosm of Las Vegas, and it was very glitzy and bright and showy, and that was the beginning of Wheel of Fortune. And, you know, 40 years later, we're still talking about it.
Yeah, I think it's great. And I also think it's great that it didn't take the place of Jeopardy.
No, absolutely. Well, listen, two of the most successful TV shows ever, and where in America, rather, would you not see Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy back to back?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
As iconic a duo as Batman and Robin.
Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more.
Or peanut butter and jelly.
All right, Christian, well, thank you very much. Nice to have you back. How about a quick plug for our good friends at the Buzzer Blog?
Of course, BuzzerBlog.com, the number one game show website in the world. Whether you're looking for information on new shows, returning shows, how the world of game shows is adapting to the world of coronavirus, casting information, retro reviews, and so much more. Whether you're an industry insider, a game show junkie, or complete nerds like me, Tom, and Mike, BuzzerBlog.com is the place to go. And it's good to be back. Thank you very much for having me.
So good to be back.
Okay, so we're going to definitely have to ramp up the questions, Michael.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing is I'm happy to keep coming up with questions that Christian can just knock out of the park without trying. But yeah, if y'all out there have any good, like really, really difficult trivia questions, send them in. We want to try and see the limit, test the limits of Christian's abilities.
And the good news is he doesn't follow our social very closely. So if you want to DM them to us, or if you want to send us the question with contact info, and then we can DM you back to get the answer so that he doesn't see it or whatever, if you want to make sure, please let us know. But you got to send us the answer some way.
Yeah. I will tell you this. We're on the up and up on this. We're not going to fake it.
Let me tell you what, and the way he came out of the gate with all of that information, do you think we need to?
Right?
I'm blown away. I'm literally blown away.
The fact that he was just immediately like, it was this guy. And
right.
Here's the entire story about it. It's like, oh, okay, well, I guess I need to dive deeper next time.
Yeah. I mean, that's just amazing. All right. Speaking of amazing, one of my absolute all-time favorite game shows.
We've talked about the concept of the grilled cheese and tomato soup show, mm-hmm. and this one is it for me through and through. Watching with my mom growing up, we played the computer game with my grandma all the time. It is a staple in the Jacobs household.
And it's actually something I had a home game of at one point, too.
I did as well, with the little green slide.
Yeah.
Slid the thing over to reveal the letter.
Correct. Yeah. Super awesome. All right. Uh-huh. We're doing Wheel of Fortune this week. It's coming up next. You've been listening to America's Favorite Game Show podcast. Tell them what they've won. Everybody knows the beginning of this show. I mean, how could you not?
One of the most iconic game show themes of all time. In fact, the original version of this tune was written by Alan Thicke.
Wow.
I believe we've mentioned him in the past in this regard, but he writes the occasional tune.
Yeah, he wrote, I want to say, like, Joker's Wild or something that
yeah,
we did.
Yeah, it's a shame these things don't stick in my memory.
Yeah, I know.
But at one point I knew that. Anyways, later it was actually rewritten by Merv Griffin himself because he wanted to be able to give himself royalty payments for it instead of
what?
Alan Thicke. Yep.
What?
Look, Merv Griffin is all about making bucks in game show world, and
I know, but the more I research him and learn about him, the less I like him.
I kind of agree, but there's no denying that the dude knows how to make a freaking game show.
I can't. You're right. I mean, it's like Tom Brady in football.
Yeah.
I don't have to like him, but I have to respect him.
I mean, I don't know what the context of that is, but I'll agree.
Right. Thank you. I forgot. Captain Sports. I forgot.
Yep.
All right. It's the gameplay of Wheel of Fortune, Mike. Please begin. Bring us in.
Well, the gameplay, it's basically just Hangman. But obviously souped up a little bit.
And you don't lose a limb if you get a wrong answer.
Well, okay. All right. So maybe it's not exactly like Hangman. I'm just saying gameplay-wise. Anyways, on Wheel of Fortune, you'll get three contestants typically. They mix up every once in a while. But three contestants will stand in front of this giant wheel. And on the giant wheel, there's 24 different spaces. Primarily, there are dollar amounts between $500 and $900. And then there's always one top-level prize, which will increase as the game goes on. It starts at, I believe, $2,500, then goes to $3,500, then up to $5,000 at the end of the game. There's also one lose a turn space, which is kind of self-explanatory. Your turn is just over. You cannot spin anymore. And there are two bankrupt spaces, which also causes you to lose your turn, but you will also lose any money and prizes that you have earned that round. So how are you earning these money and prizes, you ask? Well, on the other side of the stage, there is a giant board that has a series of blank tiles representing missing letters that all together will spell a word or a phrase. You will get a category of that word or phrase, movie title or exclamation or sage advice or something like that.
Yeah. Now, and they've gotten cuter as they've gone through the ages too. Like now you have like before and after where it'd be like Soylent Green, eggs and ham.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so
you
get a little more clever.
Yeah, they've done play on words. There's all kinds of things you use. There's been what am I doing right now? Like so there's all kinds of different categories and stuff. I definitely think it's gotten a little bit more diverse as it's gone on.
Sure. Well, that makes sense. I mean, you gotta mix it up as you go on. And really though, like everybody takes part in writing these puzzles. It's not just like there is a master puzzle writer or whatever like they do for most shows. It's the entire staff pitches in.
Yeah, and it's funny because I was reading that Vanna actually gets a lot of them because she's a huge crossword puzzle fan, so she has a lot of suggestions, and a lot of hers get taken.
I'm not surprised about that at all.
And then they also get a little cheeky, too, with their, sure. with you know, occasionally. Like, for instance, that's how she announced her pregnancy for her first child, I think, way back in the day. It was like, Vanna's pregnant was the puzzle.
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, there've been other gimmick ones too. Like, what was the one when it switched stations?
Yeah, when they moved off of NBC, it was like on the very final episode of NBC. The phrase was, "Tell the powers that be."
Yikes, that's a little ominous.
Yeah, it's like right on the head too, don't you think?
I mean, a little bit.
It's like basically saying, "We hate you, producers." Like, essentially, that's what you're saying. But yeah, so they've definitely been a little cheekier as they've gone to. But I also feel like a lot of game shows have. Like, look at Family Feud that, like, literally will have puzzles that make fun of Steve Harvey, who's the host.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I mean, it's a thing that I think naturally comes with just the age of the show, is that it's able to almost become a parody of itself.
Right.
So anyways, these two different elements of the show are combined by a contestant spinning the wheel, and they determine a value, and then they are allowed to guess a letter that may or may not appear in the word or phrase on their puzzle. They're not allowed to use vowels at this point, just for the spin. They can only guess consonants. If that letter is in the answer, then each iteration of the letter is going to be revealed, and you're going to get money for each one. So for example, let's say the puzzle was a movie title, and the movie was The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. If you guess the letter S, you've spun $500, let's say. You guess the letter S, you're about to get a ton of money, because you're going to get $500 for each S that appears in the title. So in this case, it's what? 4 in Assassination, 2 in Jesse, and 1 in James. So that's 7 times $500. You just made a bunch of money. Now, obviously, that's an extreme example because that's a very long movie title, but it illustrates the point that you could theoretically, if you guess the right letters, win a bunch of money. And that's a large strategy of this game, is not necessarily guessing the letters that are going to reveal the phrase to you, but even once you know it, continuing to guess letters that you know appear frequently to bank more money.
You know, interesting side note here. Normally when the person guesses, whoever the host is of the show will say, yeah, there's 2 S's, or in this case, there's 5 S's. They say that, so they'll tell you how many is each letter is in the puzzle. Nowadays, Pat gets a little, there's a screen that he looks at that tells him how many S's there are, how many T's there are. But back in the day, they used to have some PA sitting there doing finger, like holding up 2 fingers for 2 S's. And they called those guys the Finger Boys.
Whoa. I think I would have come up with a different name.
Terrible name, but man, can you imagine, like, you're at the bar after the taping of the show and the guy's like, yeah, so what do you do for a living? Huh? I'm a finger boy. I mean, yikes, dude.
I'm going to go talk to this other person. See you later.
Yeah, thank you. Goodbye. Anyway, continue, please.
So we're assuming that they have guessed a correct letter. They've guessed S in that long movie title and gotten a bunch of dollars. And so they now get to either go again, spin the wheel, get more money, you know, that sort of thing. They can buy a vowel for $250, which apparently is not changed at all over the course of the show, which is interesting because the amount that you win has always increased with inflation, but you'd think that the vowel buying would as well. Anyways,
right.
You can buy a vowel for $250. And, you know, I didn't think about this until just now, but you don't pay for each vowel that's in there, right? You just say, I want an A for $250, and you get as many A's as there are, right?
That is correct. You're paying for the opportunity to show the vowels that you're choosing.
Right,
so if you choose,
that's what I thought. I wasn't sure though. Or you can attempt to solve the puzzle. If there is no letter that you've guessed that ends your turn, you can also end your turn by guessing a previously guessed letter, whether it's on the board or not, not guessing within the time limit, or solving the puzzle incorrectly. You know, trying to guess and saying the wrong thing, which I love how frequently people will know the answer and they just say the wrong word for some reason or another, and it's just like, oh, what a bonehead maneuver, like, you know. Well, or a letter's missing and it's so obvious what it is and they keep putting the wrong letter in there.
Well, and you know what's sad is that they, the contestants also have a board that is off camera of all the letters that are lit up, and they go out once they've been chosen. So literally, if you hear somebody ever ask for a letter that's already been chosen, they didn't look at the board first.
Oh, I thought you just had to remember that.
No, wow. No. Okay. No, there's actually a board there for the contestants that like will turn off the light of gotcha. The letter that they've guessed. So you look up and say, well, okay, nobody's chosen L, I can choose L.
And then in between rounds, they do a toss-up puzzle. They also do this at the start to determine the round order, or at the start of the game to determine who gets interviewed first. And you earn a little bit of extra money. But they do it in this sort of speed-up format where letters are just revealed until someone can buzz in and get it correct. And then I think at the end, they do like a triple toss-up. I've not actually seen this one in person, but I read about it, where it's just basically three puzzles in a row. And
I don't know if it's always at the end or if it's in the beginning or what, but just periodically I've seen triple toss-ups where they do literally like movie titles and it'll be three separate movie titles.
Right, and then it's really only the third, though, that determines the round order, I think. In other words, who goes first. Anyways, they play through a few rounds of that, guessing puzzles, earning points. Then there is a final round where they play in a speed-up format, which is just I say speed up format. They use the term speed up format to apparently refer to two different formats, unless mm-hmm. I've, you know, mistakenly misunderstood that or whatever. But this one, the host will spin the wheel and determine a value, and then the contestants will take turns calling letters that may or may not be in there, again, getting money for each letter. And then after they get their letter, they have 3 seconds to guess it, and then it passes to the next person no matter what. You don't get to go multiple times in a row, even if you get a letter. So they keep doing that to get the score, and whoever at the end of that round has the most money and prizes all tallied up is going to be the winner and go on to the bonus round. The bonus round starts with they have an envelope from one of 5 wheel slots. They're each labeled one letter, W-H-E-E-L. And that's I don't want to say new development, but it's not been there since the start of the show. It's a relatively new thing, but it's been consistent enough that it's worth mentioning. And then they get a single puzzle on the board and are immediately given R, S, T, L, N, and E, and of course the category of the puzzle. Those letters, of course, being the most common in the English language, the most 5 common consonants and the most common vowel.
Right, and back in the day were the ones that everybody always chose, so it only made sense. Well, they're always going to choose those. Let's just give them to them anyway.
I was about to ask that because I could have sworn I remembered a time when they didn't automatically get those that people would have to choose.
Yeah, people would choose, but they literally chose the same ones every once in a while you'd have somebody go out on a limb.
Right.
But for the most part, everybody chose R, S, T, L, and E. I mean, that was just the go-to. And I don't know when it actually changed. I'm sure we could find the date if we want to dig. But it actually changed where they gave you those 5. And
that makes sense.
And the E. And that to me, I laugh at because I was like, oh God, how many words are left then? You know what I'm saying?
So then they get to add 3 more letters and 1 more vowel, again, revealing any iterations of those that appear in the puzzle. And then they have 10 seconds to guess it. It's usually a somewhat more difficult puzzle, but often with that many letters, if the R, S, T, L, and E pan out, then you can strategically choose your next 3 letters and vowels to either eliminate possibilities or some things like that.
Right.
People get it pretty frequently, but even if they don't, either way, the envelope is open to reveal what they could have won or lost, which is typically a high-value prize. Lots of money, cars, vacations, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if you remember this, there was a round where, I don't know what it was called, the buying stuff round, I guess, but their head was sort of superimposed in a little circle in the top left corner, and the camera would pan across this like room of prizes that were all labeled with money, and they could spend the money that they earned to buy stuff.
That was after every round, Mike. That was the way it used to be. Yeah. Way back in the day. And, they did it definitely in the daytime, and they may have done it in the nighttime one too, but definitely in the daytime one, I clearly remember. They would, you'd win, let's say you won $2,600 from the round. you'd have $2,600 to spend. And they used to open the show that way, too, sometimes. They'd be like, look at all these wonderful prizes. You can win up to $63,000 of prizes in this room on today's version of the prices, not the price, right, of Wheel of Fortune. And they would open up the show like that, too, sometimes. But what happened is Pat would be there, or Chuck Woolery, whoever the host was, and you would see he would be telling you how much money you have left, and you would see the contestant in the window talking about the prizes and all the prizes in the whatever you want to call it, the showroom, I guess.
Yeah.
And the showrooms had different themes. Like, there was a dining room, there was a playroom. I always loved the game room because that had like the pool table, right, and like the cool stuff like that. But like the dining room had like a hutch and a
an
dining room table. Yeah, exactly. New china. Now, the cool thing is if you did win a lot of money and you had that kind of money to spend, you know, there was a bunch of little things too. Like, I'll take the toaster for $30, you know, this, that, and the other thing. But they had trips and things that were like in framed pictures on the window. So it'd be like, right, you'd see like a framed thing that said Tahiti, and it would like be $3,000, and it'd be a trip to Tahiti.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, that's my first recollection, my first remembrance of Wheel of Fortune, and I loved that. And that went away, I guess, in 89 as well.
Okay.
You know, at least on the daytime one, or maybe it was 85. I don't know. But that was, yeah, that buying stuff thing was like how you got it. And the cool thing was, is that, you know, you never lost any of your prizes. So once you bought a prize, it was yours to keep, no matter whether you won, lost, or anything else. Like, you couldn't in the next round suddenly lose all your prizes.
Gotcha. Yeah. And it's funny, like, I didn't remember that well because I thought it was just at the end of the game. But yeah, it was one of those things that, like, I didn't remember until it was gone. Like, I distinctly remember seeing an episode where it didn't happen, and I was like, wait a minute, wasn't there a thing where this happened? And I thought maybe I'd like dreamed it or something, but yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because I wonder if it was actually more work or less work on the production crew to get rid of that. I would assume it's probably less work once you get rid of that. But I mean, that's also the reason, and we'll talk more about this when they go from turning to touching on the screens as well.
Uh-huh.
Just to save time in the production part of that whole spiel. So, anything else on gameplay we need to know about?
I think that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I mean, it's Wheel of Fortune. Most people know what it is. Yep. Most people know how to play it. Most people have played it in some sort of relevance, whether it's on a computer or whatever. All right, when we come back, we're going to be dealing with the game show history of Wheel of Fortune. We'll talk about that next. You've been listening to America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won. Welcome back in. Segment 3 of episode number 21. We're doing Wheel of Fortune this week as our featured game show on America's favorite podcast, Tell Them What They've Won. Mike, talk about Marv Griffin.
Yeah, a little typo in our notes here. Merv Griffin, he, in fact, has always been a fan of Hangman. Him and his sister apparently used to play it on, like, road trips as kids back in the day.
Sure.
And he had always wanted to make a show about it, but he knew it needed a hook. He couldn't just put Hangman on a game show. So he decided to incorporate a casino element, namely the roulette wheel. So yeah, it's literally a combination of Hangman and roulette. It's funny, when they built the wheel initially, there's all sorts of little fun stories about the wheel, but they brought in a consultant from Caesar's Palace in Vegas to help build it.
Really?
Yeah. But I don't know if you've ever spun a casino roulette wheel, but those things are smooth. And apparently, yeah, the first version of the wheel was too smooth, and
really?
They had to actually have a stagehand like underneath the platform just stick his foot out and stop it.
What?
Yeah.
No way.
Apparently, you know.
Really? Oh, that's yeah. Well, first of all, let me tell you, I have definitely spun a roulette wheel many, many times in Vegas because I work in casinos. Yeah, not only are they smooth, they will, I mean, the bearings, they'll spin forever.
Right.
I mean, they hardly ever, as a matter of, they don't typically stop until the casino worker actually stops them, the dealer, if you will, stops them. Wow, that's hilarious.
And also, initially, the wheel stood upright. I'm not sure the order of operations there, like whether that upright wheel is the one that needed to be stopped manually or if it was when they first went to the horizontal one that we have today. I'm not exactly sure. And again, I mean, this is all, who knows if that's actually true. But it's a fun story either way.
Sure.
And the initial choice for host was an actor by the name of Ed Burns. He was apparently just awful. Apparently he was incredibly drunk the whole time.
What?
He claimed to calm his nerves. So I don't even think it was like disputed that he was drunk, but he was not good at it. Apparently he was also continually rehearsing the vowels, A-E-I-O-U, backstage because he had to remember them. Merv overheard that one day and was like, all right, this is it. This dude is out of here. So he got the boot pretty quickly.
Dude, that's, it's funny, but Pat and Vanna have admitted to drinking when they do the recording show too.
Well, okay, I would say they've earned it. You know, you got to earn the ability to be able to do that. You can't be doing that on day one.
Still, I mean, Pat was literally quoted. I want to give you this quote because this is amazing. All right. At NBC in Burbank, we had a place called Los Arcos across the street, and they served great margaritas. This is him telling the New York Times, by the way, or the LA Times, by the way. Vanna and I would go across the street and have two or three or six. And then... Yeah, and then come and do the last shows and have trouble recognizing the alphabet.
Oh, no kidding. Six margaritas. Like I've hosted my game shows after like two or three beers. And like if I'm having like my fourth beer during the show, by the end of the show, it's getting a little difficult to keep it together. Like six margaritas and then go host Wheel of Fortune?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I knew he was good, but now I think he's really good.
Right. Well, like I say, he's earned it.
That's amazing. Okay. All right. So he gets the boot.
Yeah. Ed Burns is out like a light. And so January 6th, 1975, we see the premiere of Wheel of Fortune, this time hosted by one of our favorites, Chuck Woolery. Chuck Woolery, indeed. And Susan Stafford was the original letter turner along with Chuck. And they both stayed continually on from 75 on into 81. That's when Chuck Woolery left. There was a dispute over his contract with Merv Griffin. And apparently their relationship became quite strained. And if I'm remembering correctly, I don't think they've spoken since.
Who, Chuck and Susan haven't?
No. I'm sorry. Chuck and Merv Griffin.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I would not be surprised by that. Merv Griffin does not sound like it matters all that much to him. As long as there's money attached, he'll do whatever he needs to do.
Yep, that's true. But, you know, outside of that, before he left, Woolery hosted almost continuously that entire time. There was an episode where Alex Trebek once subbed in, which is pretty
nice.
Cool.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. But then in December 28th, 1981, that's Pat Sajak's debut as the host. And of course, you know, the host everybody knows to this day, so iconic. But he was initially a kind of an odd choice in the grand scheme of things. He was a weatherman on his local station. And the actual quote is that he was, quote, too local to be hosting a national show. Anything of that scale seemed beyond his reach. But Merv Griffin really believed in him, so much so that he threatened to cancel the show if they would not put Sajak in as the host.
Wow.
Yeah. And so again, Merv Griffin, man, like, he knows what he wants. Say what you will about him as like a person and his dealings, but again, like, he can make it happen. And boy, did he make the right choice, because Sajak is incredibly popular
and still there to this day.
That's what I'm saying. And then, so yeah, Susan Stafford stayed on for another year or so. She left in October of 82. And then there was an exhaustive nationwide search. They brought in a ton of different people, you know, competing, I guess, as it were. Nowadays it'd probably be a reality show to do it.
Sure.
But yeah, they led to Vanna White, who Merv Griffin picked. And again, you know, excellent choice. Again, you know, as with Chuck Woolery and Susan Stafford, they have remained on the show, not just like over time, but like almost continuously. There have been some times when Sajak had to step away. And like Christian mentioned in the news, had some just abysmally poor substitutes.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. It's tough to replace Pat Sajak.
Yeah, well, there you go. Now, I do know there was an episode, going back to Alex Trebek, that he hosted in like 97, I believe it was, that was a celebrity match between Sajak and Vanna White, which is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was part of the switcheroo that they did in for April Fools of 97, where Alex hosted, and I'll put this episode up. I haven't found the other one yet, because what also happened was Pat Sajak went on and hosted Jeopardy.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As well. So I'll throw it up. It's a lot of fun. Who's the guy? Johnny Gilbert introductions.
Yeah.
But they do the introductions of Pat and Vanna, who play against each other, with the Jeopardy theme in the background on Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, that's great.
It's so much fun. I'll throw it up there. You'll see.
Yeah, I got to check that out. That sounds awesome. I believe Pat technically wins that episode. They're both playing for charity, obviously. But then they play the last puzzle together, and then obviously they just sort of combine their winnings, or they don't combine them, right? They're each playing for their own charity. Was that it?
Correct. Yeah. They played for she played for the American Cancer Society, played for the Boy Scouts of America.
There you go. There was also a story that I didn't find a whole lot about, but it was around this same time, 97 or so. I think this might be a Carmen Sandiego thing where it could be of spurious origin, but apparently there was a celebrity episode with William Shatner, and he was doing so poorly that he rage quit after round two and had to be replaced by another player, Julie Pinson.
Actually, I went down this rabbit hole only because I am the biggest, well, not the biggest Star Trek fan ever, but I'm a huge Star Trek fan.
For sure.
Apparently, according to Pat, now, again, I don't have any. I am reading this purely from what I've researched. So Christian may still have to go down the rabbit hole to confirm or deny this.
Sure.
But according to Pat, there were technical delays during the taping, and Shatner stayed as long as he could, but was forced to leave after round two to catch a plane and was replaced by Julie Pinson for the rest of the game.
Gotcha. I mean, I could see that. He's probably a busy man, had something to do.
Yeah, but I can also see him leaving, too.
Apparently, well, and that's the thing. Like, he's got a flair for the dramatic. I could really see it being true. It was one of those things that when I read, I was immediately like, oh, that sounds right. And then I was like, wait a minute. That's usually a flag of, like, is that right?
And apparently the falsities or the myths online say that Pat was continuously making Star Trek jokes that was upsetting with William Shatner, as well as him doing Too Bad, supposedly.
I see.
Which
I
believe that, and I don't believe that at the same time. Like, right. Nowadays, I wouldn't believe it. I'd be like, William Shatner has gotten humble and makes fun of himself now. So, like, I don't know if I'd believe it today, but back in those days, I kind of would.
Yeah, I mean, in 97, I don't really remember where Shatner was at that point, but I'm sure he was. I don't know. Like I say, he's got a flair for the dramatic. I could see it going either way. But based on the little amount of information I can have and then your side of it just then, I would have to imagine that's probably not a true story. And it's more along the lines of he is a busy man and had a plane to catch. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I like him enough to do that.
Nice. Yes.
Also, there was one in that. This is the same kind of time span, 97, 98. There was a spinoff, a children's version on the Game Show Network called Wheel 2000.
Really?
Another one. Yeah, I've not seen.
Know about that.
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't really go down the rabbit hole on that one, but it existed. So that's the thing. Apparently, just, you know, made a lot simpler for children, and they won prizes instead of giant piles of cash.
Poor kids. No, nobody ever gives cash to the kids. They just get prizes.
Right. Speaking of substitutes for Pat, there was one that was not terrible. In 2019, Vanna got to host a couple episodes. Pat was out. He was recovering from surgery, and they let her take the helm, which I think is great.
Dude, and I've seen, I think, at least one, maybe even two, like CBS Sunday morning interviews with Vanna White. And she is one of the most genuine, humble people in the world, and literally talked about how she was so scared the first time to go out there and actually be the host.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to go ahead and I don't know if she's to the same echelon as Betty White, but I'm definitely putting her in that same category of like American treasures. She's just such a genuine, honest person and has a very good heart. And like her philanthropy is awesome. Just a great person altogether. And yeah, I don't want to let the episode go by without singing her praises.
No, and the funny thing is that the gal who lived across the street from me, her name was Noelle Mackley and her brother Christopher. And their grandmother, I want to say, made Vanna White a dress and mailed it to her. And she wore it on the air.
No kidding.
And, you know, she never wears a dress twice. She's worn over 6,500 dresses. It's like, it's part of the thing. But the designers design them, she wears them, and then they send them back. Like, she doesn't get to keep any of them. But
I
remember my neighbors saying that their grandmother had made a dress for her and she wore it. And this is going back in, I'm going to say, late 80s, early 90s, somewhere in there. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty cool.
That is really cool. By the way, speaking of the over 6,500, there were a couple interesting tidbits that I found while I was doing the research for this. And sure. I thought that we were going to have to do some correction department stuff for our episode on The Price is Right, but apparently this has happened since we recorded that episode. Bob Barker is no longer the longest running host of a game show. Pat Sajak has now taken that throne as of with this latest season.
Really?
Yes. And depending on how you count it, Wheel of Fortune could be said to be the longest running game show. The Price is Right technically started airing first, so as far as like time on the air, Wheel of Fortune still got, I mean, I'm sorry, Price is Right has still got it, but Wheel of Fortune has now aired more episodes than Price is Right.
Wow. Well, that's an interesting little tidbit there. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. It's a worldwide phenomenon. There's over 40 international versions. Usually we'll talk about the international versions. There's no need to this time. There are 40 of them. Imagine a language. There's probably a Wheel of Fortune for it. Actually, 40. There's like 250 languages, maybe more.
Yeah, and I bet you our friend Marv Griffith is making a lot of money from those, too.
Oh, yeah, yes. Well, especially since he rewrote that theme song. Think about that. God.
Yeah.
He's getting royalties for 40 international versions. Like, that guy. He's a smart man. He may be a jerk, but he's a smart man. There's also numerous home versions, both like officially made by the show for take-home editions and licensed remakes for sale in the store. And like we talked about earlier, I had one with the little green slats that you had to slide open to reveal the letters. And I don't think I ever figured it out as a kid, and I still don't know to this day how you would actually play it. Because to me, it's almost like in Dungeons & Dragons, you have a DM. There's got to be someone who's not actually playing, right? That is the Vanna White and knows what the answer to the puzzle is so that you can reveal the right letters. Is that not correct?
And I think that was the problem. If I recall correctly, when we were playing this as kids, it was just my brother and I. And it's kind of sucks to play two players because one's got to be the host.
Right. Exactly.
Much better to play it on a video game.
Well, and there's a ton of those too. I believe there were 15 different versions produced by the Game Tech company alone, and that was in the sort of NES era. There were also computer versions. The one I remember most distinctly, I had it on the Commodore 64, and I used to play that actually with my grandmother. So if you can imagine a grandmother in the 80s playing computer games, that's what my life was like as a childhood.
Wow.
But it was awesome. We had so much fun with it. And then even Game Tech as a company went under, but of course the Wheel of Fortune franchise lives on through many other video games, keeps going. There's also a popular series of slot machines in Vegas. I've never been to Vegas, so I haven't played them, but I mean, of course there are. Like, why would there not be Vegas games on Wheel of Fortune? It was designed to be a Vegas game.
It is so true. And I can tell you, you knew I lived there for 3 years and I worked for the casinos. And it's not just there, by the way. Wheel of Fortune machines are in every casino known to man in some regard. Now, Wheel of Fortune themselves, the actual, you know, trademark, definitely is the most popular of those games. But there is spinning wheels on many games that really are now a one-off of the Wheel of Fortune games that they've tried to capitalize on the popularity of those slot machines. They were some of my favorites too, playing when I played slots. I don't recommend playing slots because you don't make a lot of money doing it, but God, are they fun.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because I would think, like you said, there's all these like sort of other versions that are just using the same name. You have to imagine with something that's as generic as that term, like Wheel of Fortune is a thing that exists outside of this show. It's a concept, right?
Right.
And it's also become so ubiquitous. And there's a term for this, but I don't remember what it is. But it's basically the idea of we say Kleenex to mean generic tissue, right?
Right, exactly right.
And so like it has to be next to impossible to enforce any sort of copyright on the name of this show.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, I think you're probably looking at more of like a typing, you know, like a font is
sure.
The trademark of it. You know what I'm saying?
That's
sort
yeah.
of thing. So, yep. But I agree. And what a fantastic thing it is. You know, I read something recently that both Pat and Vanna's contracts come due this year and that there's a chance they may not continue.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I don't know. I mean, Pat's saying he doesn't want to do it until it dies. He'd like to do it and go off in a blaze of glory and let someone else take the helm. But I mean, I don't see it dying anytime soon. And they're only working 40 days a year.
Right. Well, okay. So here's the thing. First of all, like you say, 40 days a year, I'm sure they can handle it, you know, even being aged. But the show is massively popular. Even if they get tired of it and want to retire, they absolutely can. They can do the Bob Barker thing and have a proper send-off. But they'll be replaced. Okay, I don't want to say they'll be replaced. Like, who cares?
They'll be succeeded.
They will be succeeded. The show will live on. That show has no signs of stopping. It is an absolute juggernaut, an American icon. It's not going anywhere. I would love to see Sajak and White continue as long as they can. But honestly, I think that they've given us, 35 years of a fantastic show.
I know.
It's up to them at this point. I'm not going to be upset if they leave. I get it. But yeah, like what a fantastic. And even before that, Chuck Woolery's run was incredibly successful. Like almost from day one, it just astronomically took off. So yeah, don't be worried. If you're a fan of the gameplay, like I am, I think it's a great game. It's not going anywhere.
Well, and you know, I'm the show guy and I love this game, and there's not a ton of show, if you will. But it is great. It is just fun. It's a institution. You know, we've got to rate it. And
yeah, I was
going to
say with that, give me, what's your rating? Let's give it letters.
How many letters? Okay. So
I want to say specifically vowels.
All right, so out of five vowels, A, E, I, O, U, there are five vowels.
Yeah.
Out of five vowels, I'm giving it a 4.5, Michael, 4.5.
Wow.
It is great. It you know, I was worried when we started researching this that this was going to be another one like Remote Control that as I started watching, I mean, and here's the thing. I still watch Wheel occasionally. If it's on television, I'm watching it. Like, I don't tune in every night. I don't set my my brother still to this day watches Jeopardy every single night. He goes and at 7:30 or whenever it's on, he turns it on and watches it every night.
Yep.
And I don't do that with anything really, especially television based because of DVRs now and you know all the technology we've got. Yeah. I have other things going on in my world that I don't have enough time to do that. But I will tell you that if I happen to be watching a television and Wheel of Fortune is on, I will sit there and watch the whole thing. I love it still to this day. It still holds the same nostalgia for me that it did back in the day, you know, or I guess that's not really saying that, but it still holds the same fascination for me as it did back in the day. The nostalgia is perfect. The hosts are great. The gameplay is good. You're yelling at the screen. You're yelling at the screen. And I think any game's good if you're yelling at the screen. It's great.
That's what I was going to say is the biggest, first of all, I agree with what you said 100%. We're not going to have any differing opinions here, so I'm just going to echo everything.
No, that's fine.
You know, I think the most fun about this show is the play at home ability. You know, Jeopardy, you can play at home with as far as gameplay, but you know, it's a difficult game. Wheel of Fortune, it's accessible to everyone. Everyone knows words. Everyone knows phrases. Everybody can figure these things out. And
yeah.
Obviously people can be skilled and better at it than others, but the play at home ability, I think is maybe unmatched. And like you said, the hosts are fantastic, the prizes are fantastic, the thrill of it all, the gameplay, everything about this show is great. It's such a perfect blend of Hangman and crossword puzzles and just casino odds. I was watching an interview with a contestant, and he was saying, like, it doesn't matter how good you are, the wheel could still just spin against your favor and you're done. And I love that there's that aspect to it. So again, yeah. Since I agree with everything you said, I have to go with the exact same score. I'm giving it a 4.5. I still don't want to give it the 5 perfect that I gave Double Dare, simply right. because Double Dare has a trivia aspect that this does not have.
Sure.
But like, I mean, I'm hesitant to even say 4.5 because I want to say 4.75 maybe. Mm-hmm. Just because it is that good of a show.
It is. And I just love it. I really, out of all the ones we've done so far, this point is probably my favorite. And I understand how Double Dare is definitely your favorite, but this one's probably my favorite to this point.
I don't fault you for that, for sure.
All right, Mike. Well, that's all the time we have for today.
It is indeed. Thank you so much to Christian for the news this week, all the folks at Buzzer Blog, all of you for tuning in, and everyone for helping making our off-season episode so incredibly popular.
Yeah, it's been great. Tune in again next time when we bring you the latest and greatest in the world of game shows, as well as a brand new featured show, too.
And remember, you can always catch us online, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and of course, tellthemwhattheywon.com.
Please subscribe, share, like, and drop us a review if you like what you've heard.
And if you didn't like it, I hope you land on the bankrupt space.
See you next week, Mike.
Bye, Tom.
You've been listening to America's favorite game show podcast, Tell Them What They've Won, a JTAC audio production, copyright 2020. No part of this podcast may be reproduced by anyone without the express written consent of the creators. For more information or to contact us, please go to tellthemwhattheyvewon.com. All right, Mike, what did you learn this week?
I learned the impact that maybe such a seemingly innocuous thing as a game show can have, not just on like individuals or groups or even society as a whole. Like, this show has really changed America in a way. Like, there are people who, like me, have been watching this with their family for generations, and it's a tradition almost. Like, it has embedded itself into America, and I think just goes to show that maybe, you know, a silly game show on TV shouldn't be seen as a silly game show on TV all the time.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
What about you?
I've learned that I missed this. I missed this podcast. I missed doing it while we had a break. I missed game shows. And I reaffirmed that, and I've said this, I don't know if I've said this to you, but I've definitely said this to other people, that if I was ever going to be on a game show, Wheel of Fortune's the one I want to go on first.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Copyright 2020, a JTAC audio production.